Good evening, everyone. Thanks for coming. It's great to be back. Although it's sad that Glasser's not here. I'm happy I get to be here, and I hope you are too. And so we're going to do similar to what we did last time, where Rabbi Glasser is going through the Shmon Esrei, is going through the paragraphs and the themes and the deeper meaning behind the words that we say every single day. I think it also is helpful to sometimes take a step back and to ask some of the more broad questions, the abstract questions about tefillah, and get a better understanding of what exactly tefillah is and how tefillah works. And so last time we spoke about how it makes sense to make a request from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Why do I have to ask him for things if he knows what I need, he knows what I deserve, and why do I have to even get up there and make all these bakashos? And let's assume that now I understand why I'm making these requests. But the next question, which follows naturally, is what happens when we daven so hard, and we daven over and over to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he should help us, that he should give us something, and he doesn't seem to be answering. It doesn't seem that he's listening to those tefillos. So we're making all these requests, but is it a waste of our time when we're davening and Hashem just isn't giving us the things that we're asking for? Isn't the point of tefillah to get the things that we need? And so if we're asking and asking and not getting what we need, is there really a point to tefillah? I heard a story from former chief, Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks. He said around 20 plus years ago when he was appointed as the chief rabbi in the UK, there are store seats over there, when Rabbi Sacks was appointed as the chief rabbi in the UK, it happened to also be that there was an archbishop who was also appointed at that same time. And so to celebrate the new appointment of Rabbi Jonathan Sacks as the chief rabbi in the UK and this new archbishop, they invited both Rabbi Sacks and the archbishop to a soccer match. To celebrate their new appointment, they both go to the game. They have a whole fancy reception at the beginning of the match that both the chief Rabbi Sacks and the archbishop go up on the field before the game, and they speak to the entire crowd, all the soccer fans. It's a game, the team is Arsenal, and Rabbi Sacks was apparently a fan of that team growing up, and so he was so excited to get up in front of the whole crowd and to pump everybody up, and he recites a prayer that Arsenal should be Matzliach and they should win this soccer game. And the archbishop also does a similar thing, and they both go back to their chairs. They go back, they have these box seats, and they're watching the game, and they're so excited. And of course, at the end of the day, the team Arsenal lost. They were playing their arch rivals, Manchester United. Apparently, that's a very big deal in soccer. And Arsenal lost to Manchester United, and they lost 6-2, which apparently is also a big deal when it comes to soccer. Those don't seem like large numbers, but in soccer numbers, that's a big deal. It was the biggest defeat that they had in 63 years on their home advantage, and it was a very embarrassing situation. And so in the newspaper the next day, they wrote a letter to the newspaper, and they said, if both the chief rabbi and the archbishop can both get up before the game and pray that Arsenal should win, and still they lose to Manchester United, does that not prove that God does not exist? And so Rabbi Sacks, being who Rabbi Sacks is, writes into the newspaper the next day, and they publish his response. And he says, to the contrary, it proves that God does in fact exist. It happens to be that God is a fan of Manchester United. But we can all relate to that question of how could it be that Hashem is not answering this prayer? Not every single prayer is as inspiring as it can be, but sometimes they are. And sometimes we have that Yom Kippur, Shmona Esrei, where we can't imagine Hashem would turn us away empty-handed. And yet sometimes it seems that Hashem is not answering our tefillos. And so I think tonight it'll be important for us to go through some various perspectives about what we can take away from an unanswered tefillah. There's no one answer. Again, like last time, it's not a halachic discussion. There's no final psak. If there is one final answer, then only Hashem knows what that really is. But we'll see various approaches from amongst the Rishonim to the late Achronim and the contemporary Rabbanim about what it means to have an unanswered tefillah. And so hopefully by seeing all these various different approaches, we'll walk away with some chizuk about how to keep on davening and why perhaps it is not indeed a waste of our time when Hashem does not appear to be answering our tefillos the way that we would hope. And the first step, really, is to acknowledge that there's something more to tefillah than getting the things that we need. Unanswered prayer does play a very vital role in tefillah. And this has to be the case. Because think about, why do we daven? What's the source of the fact that we have to start every single day with davening? Anyone know what's the reason, what's the source in the Torah for davening shacharis? So each of the tefillos, from the others, we learn each of the tefillos, Shacharis, Mincha, and Maariv, all learned from the others. And the first of which, Shacharis, is learned from Avraham Avinu. The pasuk says in Sefer, in Parshas Vayera, it says, Vayashkem Avraham Baboker, that Avraham got up in the morning, and he went, El HaMakom Asher Amar Sham. He went to the place where he stood. The Gemara in Bracho says, Ein Amida El Atfila. And so it must be that Avraham davened, and so too, we all have an obligation to begin our day with prayer. What was that tefillah? The Belzer Rebbe says it's very interesting to note, if you think about it. That tefillah, that was B'makom Asher Amar Sham, what was Avraham davening for? So that's what we all know when Hashem and Avraham discuss the destruction of Sodom. Hashem tells Avraham he's going to destroy Sodom, and Avraham davens to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he says, no, you can't destroy Sodom. Maybe there are at least this many tzaddikim, or that many tzaddikim. Avraham davens over and over again, and that's the source for the fact that we daven Shacharis every single day. Was that an answered tefillah? Or was that an unanswered tefillah? The Belzer Rebbe says it's interesting that the source of tefillah, of starting every single day with Shacharis, was an unanswered prayer. And so clearly, it's not a waste of time. There is something vital. There is a very crucial role that unanswered tefillah plays into our lives. And it's just important for us to try to think, and what exactly is it? What do we gain? What is productive about tefillah if it's not to get the things that we're asking for? And so we'll start with two different approaches as to what exactly we still achieve and accomplish with tefillah, even if it's not getting the things that we need. And I think that Rav Shimshon Pinkus, in the first source, puts it very well. Rav Shimshon Pinkus was a Rav in Eretz Yisrael. He was Nifter in the 1990s. And he wrote a sefer, Sha'arim B'Tefillah, all about tefillah and the different types of tefillah. And he says in the very beginning of source one, Uve'emes ka'asher mevakesh adam me'akadosh baruch hu al inyan mesuyim. Whenever someone davens to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and he requests something, so this is the key line, Etzem Maisa Havakasha Hi HaTachlis HaMavukeshes. The very fact that we're asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for something, the fact that we're making a request, that's the ikur. Yoser Me Etzem Hasagas Bakashaso. The answer to our question is not really what's so important about tefillah. Rather, it's the fact that we are asking Hashem for something. Making the request is really the important part of tefillah. If you ask someone, what's the point of all these bakashos in Shmona Esrei? We ask Hashem for this and ask Hashem for that. What's the point of it all? So naturally, you'd say the point is so that I can get all those things. I'm asking for them and hoping that I'll be able to get them from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But Rav Pinkus says that that's actually not true. More important than the answer to our tefillos is the fact that we are up there davening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Making the request is more important than the answer. So what is it? What do we gain? What do we accomplish if not getting the things that we request? So Rav Pinkus gives a really great mashal, and he compares the relationship that we have to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and our tefillos to Hashem to help us can be compared to the way that we relate to a doctor, to a rofe. But it happens to be, it's really the exact opposite. And he explains what that means with the mashal. He says, imagine you have a guy who is unfortunately not well, he has an illness, and so he goes to the doctor, and the doctor says, it's okay, I have it all figured out. As long as you come in for treatment once a week for the next few weeks, for the next couple of months, after all those treatments, I feel very confident that you're going to come away feeling better and healed from all those, from that illness that you suffer from at this moment. So the patient goes and he goes to the doctor and he goes every single time. He's on top of his treatments. And at the end of the day, it works and he gets better. He gets the refuah. But it also happens to be that this doctor, besides for being a very accomplished medical professional, is also a pretty cool guy. And the patient and the doctor get along very well. And they become very good friends. And they become chavrusas. And they stay after the doctor appointments and they're schmoozing for an hour just because they get along so well. And their families become friends and they go to each other's chasanas and they spend time together. And at the end of the day, if you go over to this patient and you ask him, what did you accomplish when you went to the hospital? When you went to this doctor, what did you accomplish? What did you receive? And so he'd say, it's actually interesting. On the one hand, I got better. I got the refuah that I needed, but you're not going to believe it. I also got a new friend. This doctor and I got along very well, and we're still friends to this day, many months after the treatments. We're still friends. If you'd ask that guy, which of those two is more important? Is it more important that you got the refuah, you were healed, or the fact that now you have a new friend who's this doctor? He'd say, obviously, the refuah is more important. The fact that I got healed, that I'm no longer sick, that's crucial. I wouldn't be here if I still had the holy. Getting a friend was a nice cherry on top. It was a nice plus to the whole hospital experience, which could be a very difficult experience. At least I got this new friend. But the ikker, the main reason I go to the hospital is not to make friends. I hope you don't go to the hospital. That's a terrible social technique. You go to the doctor in order to get a refuah. But Pinchas says the exact opposite is true when it comes to us discussing and davening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu with our tefillos. Rav Pinchas says it's not so important whether we get the things that we ask for or not. When we daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what is important, the ikar of our tefillah, is that now we're friends with the doctor. That now we have the opportunity to have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we had a conversation with Hashem. Is that walking away empty-handed? Was that a waste of time that I davened and Hashem didn't give me the things that I asked for? Not a waste of time at all, says Rav Pinchas. You had an opportunity to have a relationship with Hashem. That was definitely something that was a productive use of your time. That's one approach from Rav Pinchas about what we gain from tefillah. If not the answer to our request, at least we get the relationship. There's another approach, and that is from the Mabit. The Mabit was a 16th century Rav from Tzvat. And he begins that by asking a question which I'm sure many of us have asked about tefillah. And that is that tefillah seems to be a little repetitive. It's a little redundant that we go to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and we ask Him for the same exact thing over and over and over. That does not seem like it would be a useful tactic if you're asking your friend for a favor. To ask him again and again and he said no 10 times and you go again, that's not going to help. That's going to make it worse. He'll be annoyed. You're bothering him. You're nudging him. That's not an effective way to make a request of Akasha of anyone. Why do we daven the same exact tefillah 3 times a day? Imagine a Mincha Maariv minyan. The whole concept. You walk into shul and you daven. You just finished one esrei. And then 5 minutes later, you're starting again. That same shmoneh esrei. Those same words. You're asking again for slicha and kapara and refuah and geula. The same exact requests again and again and again. Why is tefillah so repetitive? And the truth is, this isn't a new phenomenon, the repetitive tefillah. It actually comes up several times in the Torah itself. At the very end, towards in Sefer Dvarim, in Parshas Vayeschanan, we know that Moshe davens to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they should be allowed to enter Eretz Yisrael. As the Parsha begins, Vayeschanan al Hashem ba'eis ahi lemor, that Moshe davened to Hashem. What was he davening for? He was davening to be allowed to enter Eretz Yisrael. Hashem punished him after hitting the rock and the main Meriva that Moshe would not enter Eretz Yisrael. And so Moshe davens to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he should be allowed to enter Eretz Yisrael. How many times did Moshe daven to Hashem? 515 tefillos. As the source number 2, the Medrash says, how do we know that he davened 515 tefillos? Uminayin she'esfalel Moshe ba'osa ha'perek chamesh meyos v'chamisha asar pa'amim. How do we know that he davened 515 tefillos? It says, she'ne'emar v'ayeschanan al Hashem ba'yisahil emor. Right? I hear people saying, gematria, v'ayeschanan b'gematria hachi have. The gematria of v'ayeschanan, right? It's not like some like Hasidish gematria. This is the Medrash says, 515 is the gematria. That's how many times Moshe davened. Can you imagine davening 515 times for anything? I don't know about you. I would have stopped at like number 10, number 15. The 100th time you've asked someone for something and they said no, 515 tefillos?
It's kids,
what? Yeah, kids can do that. They have no problem. And also earlier in the Torah, in Parshas Toldos, in source number 3, Yitzchak and Rivka were davening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that they should be zocher to have a child. The pasuk says, when describing Yitzchak's tefillos, Vayetar Yitzchak LaHashem, that Yitzchak daven to Hashem. What's that word, Vayetar? Usually, when you want to say to daven, it would say that Yitzchak was mispalel. What does it mean, Vayetar? So Rashi says, in source number 3 on the bottom, Hirbe v'hiftzir b'tfila. Yitzchak davened over and over and over to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he should be zocher to have a child. And so the Mabit tries to understand. That's in the beginning, in source number 1, the first paragraph. The Mabit asks this question about why are we davening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu so many times? How do we expect that to be a productive way to ask anyone for some form of request? And so the Mabit explains that really, there's something more to tefillah than getting the things that we ask for. There's another goal, or the real goal of tefillah, is not just getting the things that we request. But rather, he says in the second paragraph, in source number 2, Elasha kavanas hatfila hi. What's the whole purpose of tfila? Lahakir lehoros ki ein ba'olam lemisha ro'i lehispalel ki im lakel yisparach. There's only one person who it makes sense to daven for. And that is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shehu Adon l'chol ha'olam, v'shanachnu chaser mikam advarim, ha'muskarim b'tfila, v'anu zochem osam l'fanav. We remind Hashem all the things that we need. Why? And this is the key line. Kedei she'nakir she'ein mi she'yachol l'sapek tarkenu. There's no one else who can fulfill all of our needs. Ula hatzilenu mikol tarvoseinu. And save us from all the trouble and suffering that we experience. Ki im ha'kel yisbarach. Hashem is the one who's able to help us. And so the Mabit says that when we daven HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that someone should have a refuah. The goal is not for the refuah. Obviously, that's very important. But the goal is that we realize that Hashem is the one who can accomplish that. There's a reason why I'm only asking Hashem for refuah. And I'm not asking anyone else to heal this person, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the only one who can provide for that. And the Mabit says that the goal of tefillah is to instill within ourselves this heightened level of emunah, to have the perspective and realize that everything we have from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The goal of tefillah is not to get the things that we're asking for. As Rav Pinkus said, the goal of tefillah is to get an opportunity to have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Mabit is saying now the goal of tefillah is to instill within ourselves the proper emunah and realize that Hashem is the sole provider of all of our needs. But this really also has a positive spin on it as well. It's not only the answer is going to be no, but think about these other things that are so fantastic. But the truth is, if you think about that, 515 tefillos about Moshe Rabbeinu. We know, Vayeschanan, it's 515 tefillos that Moshe davened to Hashem. Chazal also say that had Moshe davened one more tefillah, that 516th tefillah would have been answered. And so the consistent and repetitive tefillos that Hashem says no, Hashem says no, Hashem says no, there is a light at the end of the tunnel. There is the hope that eventually, after davening more and more, Hashem eventually will say yes. And tefillah just takes a little bit of patience. This is a mashal. Yeah, sure.
But it also says right after this, Hashem daven, 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 and he asked again and again, and finally Hashem said, that's it, stop
I'll
asking.
Tosef the bai. Yeah,
so maybe the very light.
So I think Chazal's diuk is, the Moshe Davin's pasuk says, Vayas Chanan, 515 tefillos. After those 515, Hashem says, Al Tosef Daber Elai. Stop davening to me. Why? So Chazal say, it must be, had he davened one more, Hashem would have had to give it, or whatever that means, had to give it. That 516th tefillah would have been effective, and for whatever reason, Hashem felt that this was not something that Moshe should have had. But the 516th tefillah could be it. And so it's important to keep on davening. There's a mashal of a 20-year-old guy who is very into investments, and he hears that there's this new investment opportunity, which he knows he can strike it big. There's this stock, and no one else is talking about it, and he knows that if he just invests a lot of money into this stock, he can be a very, very rich person. But he's 20 years old. He doesn't have the money. And so he goes to a bank to ask for a loan, and he walks in, and he sits down at the desk, and he says, I'd like to take out a loan for $5 million. And of course, they laugh at him, because $5 million, you're a 20-year-old kid, you're just out of college, you don't know anything, you have no assets, you don't have a home or real estate for collateral. Why should we loan you $5 million? That's a terrible idea. We're never going to get our money back. This kid in his head, he's like, I know, I'll invest $5 million now, I'll make $50 million in this 5 years, I'll pay him back so easily. But the bank, of course, they laugh in his face and they shut the door and they say no. And he goes to the next bank, and he goes to the next bank, he goes to 25 banks, and they all say absolutely not. And they all laugh at him, and he walks away feeling very discouraged. Until he goes to the 26th bank. And for whatever reason, maybe it's just a bad bank. They don't know what they're doing. But for whatever reason, the 26th bank gives him the loan, and he walks away with $5 million. He invests it like he was told is the right thing to do, and eventually he becomes a very, very wealthy person. And he has his huge mansion, which he's able to use all of his earnings to buy a very huge house, and he has a fancy office, and in his office, on the wall, he has the 25 rejection letters that he received from each of those banks. And so someone walks in to this rich man, to this now wealthy person's office, and they say, what are all those letters on the wall? And he explains that there's all these letters from the banks as we just went through. And he says, it's really unlucky of you. If only you had went to that 26th bank first, you could have saved yourself all the embarrassment, saved yourself all the rejection. It's so inconvenient. You happen to go to that bank last and you have all these letters up here. You would be better off just going to the right bank the first time. And so the rich man says, you don't understand. It's only because I was rejected 25 times that I had the ability to stand up in front of that 26th bank and present my request in front of them in a way that they accepted it. Tefillah is like water dripping into a cup. And at first, it's just a few drops and a few drops, but eventually it accumulates. And you never know that last drop that may make the bracha overflow out of the cup. You can't just say, just skip to the last drop. It's all about accumulation of tefillah. And so Moshe davened 515 tefillos, the 516th may have been the one that was answered. And Yitzchak, Vayetar Yitzchak, Yitzchak also was an example of consistent tefillah, and ultimately, Yitzchak and Rivka were answered, that they were blessed with a child. And if you're not convinced by the Mabit and Rav Pinkus, of course, there's always a fancy gematria to make it all work out. The gematria of Vayeschanan, we already said, Vayeschanan is 515. The gematria of Yitzchak Rivka is also 515. And those both are also the gematria of tefillah. Tav Pei Lamed Hei is also 515. Because both of these tefillos, both the unanswered consistent tefillah of Moshe, as well as the eventually answered tefillah of Yitzchak, both the unanswered, and answered tefillos, both equal the proper tefillah. They both are a vital component, an aspect of tefillah. And so tefillah can just take a little bit of patience sometimes, but as long as you wait in the end of the line, you may be able to see your tefillos be answered. There's a beautiful Zohar that I heard, it's not on the source sheet because I don't know how to learn Zohar inside, but I heard it from Rabbi Neuberger, who's a Rav in Bergenfield, I'm sure we know. He quoted this Zohar about Leah and Rachel. The Zohar says you can imagine Leah and Rachel had things in their lives that they were lacking, and so there were things that Leah and Rachel davened for consistently throughout their lives. The Zohar says Leah always wished that she could be the prime wife, the number one wife in Yaakov's eyes. She always felt snua, that she was hated. And so she davened to Hashem that she should no longer be the snua wife. And Rachel was infertile for quite some time. And so she davened to Hashem that she should be zochet to have children. And if you would ask them during their lifetimes, were your tefillos answered? They'd probably say, well, not really. Because Leah, in the end of the day, was always the second wife. And Rachel, yes, she had two wonderful, beautiful children, but relative to Leah's stake in the Shvatim, she had a very small piece relative to the other, to her sister. But if you look in the end of the day, look at what happened right after their lives. Where are Leah and Rachel buried? So Leah is buried in Ma'aras HaMachpelah. She's the one buried next to Yaakov, right? All the Avos are buried next to the Imahos, to their couple, Avraham and Sarah, Yitzchak and Rivka, Yaakov, and not Rachel or any of the other wives, Yaakov and Leah. In the end of the day, Leah's tefillah was answered. She's the wife who's buried next to Yaakov. And Rachel, where was Rachel buried? Rachel was buried in a place where she had the opportunity to daven for the future of Klal Yisrael. And the Pasuk says, as we know so well, Rachel mevaka al baneha. Rachel davens for her children. She becomes the Mama Rachel. She's the mother of Klal Yisrael. And end of the day, both of their tefillos are answered. And all it takes sometimes is just a bit of patience to be able to wait and see that Hashem really is listening. And that the 516th tefillah may be the one that tips the scale, that makes the cup overflow. So those are the two main approaches, the first two main approaches of one, even if the answer is no, there are still things that we gain from our tefillah. There's a relationship, as Rav Pinkus mentions. There's, as the Mabit says, the inculcating within ourselves the proper feeling of emunah that we should have. And the second idea, an offshoot of that, that even when the answer is no, the answer may not be no forever. And as long as we keep on davening and keep on persevering, just like Yitzchak's tefillah was ultimately answered, and Rachel and Leah were ultimately answered, hopefully our 516th tefillah should be the one that Hashem says yes to. But the truth is, sometimes the answer is going to be no. And this leads to the third approach that's offered by many, and that is that sometimes Hashem does say no. But Hashem says no because the thing that we're asking for is really not good for us. And we daven so hard and we say, Hashem, please help me, please give me this, please give me that. And we're davening so hard and we're crying into our sidurim, asking for things that are going to hurt us. And so Hashem has to say no because he doesn't want to hurt us. Rav Schechter, Rosh Yeshiva on YU, quotes some stories that he heard from Rav Soloveitchik. It's here in source number 5 from the Pnine Harav in his Sefer where he records things he learned from his Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik. It's also in the shout out to the new Sefer of Schechter on Tefillah, written by, from our community, Dr. Alan Weissman. And he also records these stories. And Rav Soloveitchik used to tell stories about how he was living in Europe, and he would daven and daven that he should not have to move to America. He was so comfortable where he was living. There were so many Gedolei Hador that were in Europe at the time. And he didn't want to move to America. And so he davened and he davened to Hashem, please don't make me move to America. And we know, eventually he did. And he was able to have the tremendous impact that he did. And he was very discouraged and he was a little upset about the fact that Hashem didn't answer his tefillos until the 1940s came around. And he realized in retrospect that he was davening to stay in Europe and be subject to the Nazis. He's so happy Hashem said no to those tefillos. Had Hashem said yes to those tefillos, I was davening for something that was actually going to hurt me. And so when Hashem says no, it could be, it's really in our best interest. Rav Soloveitchik calls about another story where he was davening. There was an opening in the position of president in Yeshiva College. And so he was davening and davening that he should be the new president. And the day, he did not get that role. And so he was upset until he realized that he had the opportunity to be Marbitz Torah like he never would have had he been so buckled down with all the minutiae and the political aspects of being a president of a university. I can only imagine. He was so happy in retrospect that he had the opportunity to spread Torah like he was able to. And Rav Soloveitchik said that perhaps that's the meaning of the words that we say every single day in our Shmoneh Esrei. In the paragraph, Shema Koleinu, where we daven for Hashem to hear our tefillos, we don't just say, Tekabel tefillaseinu. Rather, we say, Tekabel berachamimu v'ratzones tefillaseinu. So what does that mean? That Hashem should answer our tefillos with mercy? What's the mercy in giving things to people who ask for them? So he says, the mercy, Hashem have rachmanos, to not answer all of my tefillos. Don't answer when I'm davening so hard for things that are actually detrimental. Have the rachmim of a ratzon to only answer the tefillos that really are good for me. There's a similar idea. We just recited this past Shabbos, the Shabbos Mevarchim, and in Berchas HaKodesh, the very last sentence of the Yehi Ratzon, we say, Mole Mishalos Livenu Litova. So the Torah Tamima in his Sefer, Kasefes Bracha, suggests that Latova means Mali Mishalos Libenu. I have so many Mishalos Libenu. I have so many deepest desires of my heart, but Hashem, don't answer all of them. Hashem, only answer the ones that are Latova. And so when Hashem says no, sometimes, it's often very hard to feel this way, but sometimes it requires us to take a step back and realize that we don't always know what we're davening for. We don't know what's right for us. And when Hashem says no, it could be that no is actually in our best interest. There's a beautiful idea that I heard in the name of the Tenker Rav. The Tenker Rav was a Rav in Tenka, Hungary, until eventually he moved to Brooklyn in the early 1900s. And he was explaining a pasuk that's from around a month ago, a few weeks ago, in Parshas Beshalach. And we read about Bnei Yisrael approaching Kriyas Yamsuf, and they walk over towards the Yamsuf, and they're stuck. And they don't know what to do. On the one hand, they have the Yamsuf in front of them, and they have nowhere to go. But what's behind them? All the Mitzrim are chasing after them, ready to kill them. And so the Bnei Yisrael, they feel stuck. They have no idea what to do. And so what do you do when you're stuck and you don't know and you have no idea how you're going to get out of the situation? Say Yidav and Tekadosh Baruch Hu. And so that's what Bnei Yisrael do. They take out their Sidurim. All of Bnei Yisrael are gathering together and they're crying and they're crying to Tekadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem, please, please help us. And what Hashem says back to Bnei Yisrael is really astounding. Hashem says, in source number 6, Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, Ma titzak elai. Moshe, why are you davening to me? Hashem says to Moshe, close your siddur, stop crying, stop davening, and just go. Daber el Bnei Yisrael v'yizo, just keep on traveling, tell Bnei Yisrael to keep on traveling ahead. Why are you davening? What does that mean, Hashem? What do you mean, why are you davening? Ma titzak elai? Isn't that what we're taught in grade school, when you have an ace tzara, a difficult situation, you have no idea what to do. All you can do is turn to Kodesh Baruch Hu and ask for him to help you. And that's what they were doing. They're davening to Hashem. Can you imagine you're davening to Hashem and Hashem says, stop davening? What is stop davening ever the right answer? And so the Tenker Rav says that perhaps Moshe and Bnei Yisrael just didn't know what to daven for. If you would have asked Moshe, what are you davening for? He wouldn't have said, I'm davening for Hashem to split the Yamsuf. That's not even on Moshe's radar. That's going to be a supernatural event that the sea is just going to split on its own. That's not what Moshe is davening for. Did you just daven for a random miracle to happen in front of your eyes? You daven for things that are practical. And so Bnei Yisrael and Moshe are davening to Hashem, and they're davening that Hashem should help them defeat the Mitzrim. Right? They see a body of water on one end. There's nowhere to go. And so they think, okay, we're going to turn around. We're going to have to fight the Mitzrim. We'll take out our weapons and our swords and our bows and arrow, and we're going to go fight the Mitzrim. And so they dive into Hashem. Hashem, please help us defeat the Mitzrim in war. And so when Hashem hears that tefillah, Hashem says, Ma titzak elai. What are you davening for? You have no idea what plans I have in store. Defeating the Mitzrim through natural means? Hashem says, that's a joke. You don't even realize I set this whole thing, I orchestrated this whole situation. It was determined from Maisa Bereishis that there's going to be this moment of Kriyas Yamsuf. And so Hashem says, Ma tetzak elai, because B'nai Yisrael don't realize what to daven for. And often we daven for things that are so specific. We have very detailed tefillos. Hashem, please help me in this particular way, as if we're telling Hashem what to do. And Hashem sometimes was going to say, Ma tetzak elai. Hashem says, stop davening with things so specific. You think that that's really in your best interest? You think that that staying in Europe and not traveling to America, that's in your best interest, as Soloveitchik? Hashem says, Ma tetzak elai. Davening with such specific, detailed tefillos, it could very well be we're davening for the wrong thing. And so the Tanker Rav says, perhaps that's why the Gemara compares several things to Kriyas Yamsuf. What are some examples that Chazal say is Kashin Kriyas Yamsuf? Shidduchim are Kashin Kriyas Yamsuf. There's another, Shidduchim are obviously the most known, but the lesser known Chazal also say that Mizonos of Shaladam, Parnasa, is also Kashin Kriyas Yamsuf. So what's the connection between Kriyas Yamsuf and Shidduchim and Parnasa? Tanker Rav says that they all have this theme in common. These are all examples of things, of times when people daven for such a specific Yeshua. They say, Hashem, please help me in this way. There's this particular job. I just had an interview at this particular location. Hashem, please help me get that job. And we don't realize. Hashem says, Ma tetzak elai. Don't daven for that job. You don't realize they're advertising it this way, but really that job is so time-consuming. You'll have less time with your family, less time to learn Torah. Hashem says, don't daven for that job. You don't realize there's a different job that really is better for you. You don't know that it exists. But we're davening so specifically that Hashem has to turn us away. And also Shidduchim. I'm sure we can all relate. There's someone in Shidduchim and they daven that this date should go well. That it should go well with this person, that this person, this guy, or this girl should say yes to the shidduch. And the reality is, we don't actually know what's in our best interest. You don't know if there's someone else on the other half of America who really is the better person. And so the Tanker Rav says, Hashem says, Vatetzak Eli, when we daven so specifically. And so perhaps what's more effective is that we have a bit of a more broad tefillah. Hashem, help my family in the broad area of shidduchim. Hashem, help my family in regards to Parnassah. Not for that particular job or that particular shidduch, but just in general, Hashem, help us. And rely on HaKadosh Baruch Hu to make the choices. Don't make the choices for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And perhaps also, what can be a practical takeaway from this idea, is also just to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for that clarity. The clarity that Rav Soloveitchik had, right? It's very hard to be able to say, Hashem said no, and I give petty examples, like a job interview or a shidduch isn't a petty example, but like someone should get a refuah and Hashem says no, how is that in my best interest? It's really hard for us to always walk away and say Hashem said no, but really it's for the good. And so we should dive into HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that we should have the clarity. We should be able to understand why, as the Soloveitchik was able to realize afterwards that it was because it saved him from the destruction of the Nazis. And there are so many times that we daven and we don't know why it's in our best interest. And so we should hopefully be able to get the clarity and realize why this no is really for the better. And the Ksav Sofer also says this similar idea that you shouldn't daven too specifically is also behind the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. As the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says, Al ta'as filascha keva, don't daven a Shmoneh Esrei that's too kavua. What does that mean, to kavua? So the Ksav Sofer says, that means don't daven for something so specific, as if you know exactly what's right for you, but realize that Hashem may have a different plan. Hashem may have a Kriyas Yamsuf plan for you. And if you daven too specifically, you're going to walk away feeling very discouraged about tefillah. So that's the idea from the Tanker Rav and from Soloveitchik about the Kabbal Brachman V'ratzon as tefillah Seinu, that when Hashem says no, it could very well be Hashem is saying no because that's really the best for us. And so we have, so far, these three main perspectives that one can have when they daven and their answers are no. And first we have Rav Pinkus and the Mabit, that when we daven to Kadosh Baruch Hu, there are other things, there are other goals to tefillah besides forgetting what we asked for. There's getting the relationship with Hashem, there's instilling within ourselves proper emunah, and there's a second perspective about to keep on davening for that 516th tefillah, you don't know when it's going to come. And this third idea, that we should realize if Hashem does say no, and the answer may be no even after 516, but hopefully we should be able to understand that that really is in our best interest. But what happens to those tefillos? What happens when we daven and Hashem says no? So is Hashem just going to throw all those tefillos in the garbage because we are davening for the wrong thing? Because I don't know what to daven for. Was that a waste of my time? Are those tefillos, since they were just wrong and they were built on an incorrect assumption that I had, was that a wasted tefillah? What happens to our unanswered tefillos? And there's a beautiful idea from the Dubna Magid. Dubna Magid was a rav in the 18th century in Dubna, in Ukraine. And he gives a beautiful explanation of what happens to all these tefillos. And it all starts from what we actually mentioned earlier in this year. And that is in Parshas Vayera, in source number 8, when Hashem decides that he wants to destroy Sodom. Hashem does not just go ahead and destroy Sodom on his own. But Hashem says, I'm going to go first to ask Avraham. And the pasuk says in source number 8, Hashem amar, hamechaseh ani me'Avraham, asher ani oseh, could I possibly hide from Avraham that which I plan on doing to Sodom? I have to go ask Avraham, what does he think about this? Does Avraham have any advice that he can give me about whether I should or should not destroy Sodom? If you would ask me, why is he going to ask Avraham? What's a reason to say I'm going to go ask Avraham? So you'd probably say, maybe I have to ask Avraham because he has a lot of experience in this field, and he has a good idea about whether Hashem should destroy Sodom or not destroy Sodom. Or maybe Avraham has done so many mitzvos, he has so many zechuyos, that he deserves to be the point person that Hashem has his intimate discussions with. And so Hashem should say, I have to go ask Avraham because Avraham is such a fantastic person. That's not what Hashem says. Hashem says in the second pasuk, in source number 8, I have to go ask Avraham. Why? The Avraham hayo yiyeh lagoy gadol. I must go ask Avraham because after all, he's going to have a very, very large nation. There are going to be so many Jewish people that are all coming from Avraham, and therefore I have to go ask Avraham before I destroy Sodom. So what does that mean? What is the logical progression from one pasuk to the other? I have to ask Avraham because he's going to have so many kids. He's going to have so many kids, and they're going to have kids, and they're going to have kids. What does that have to do with destroying Sodom? I understand I have to ask Avraham because he's a smart guy, or because he has so many mitzvos he deserves to be the one to talk to Hashem. But why does it make sense? I have to go ask Avraham because he's going to have such a large nation of Bnei Israel. And so in source number 9, the Dunda Magid explains, of course, with a mashal. And he explains, there's a story he tells of two men who go to the mall, and they go shopping to buy clothes for their kids. And there was the father who was sent to do the shopping, and so it takes longer than it should. And so one father is looking through for his clothes. He has one son at home. And so he's looking through the shirts on the rack. He's looking through the clearance rack, hoping that he'll find a size that matches his son. And he's looking through all the shirts, looking through this one, looking through that one, trying to find one that at least is the right size and the right style, that the kid's not going to refuse to wear it, but this, the shirt that'll fit his child. And he sees the other guy who's shopping, also for his family, is just pulling shirts off the rack. He's pulling pants over here and socks over there. He's not checking what size they are, or what style they are, or what color they are. He's just grabbing everything and not even thinking about whether it's going to fit his kids or not. And so he's very confused. And so he goes over and he asks, why aren't you checking the size? Why aren't you checking the label of the shirts before you go and buy them? And so he says that our families are actually very different. See, you only have one child, and so he has a very specific size. And if you buy the wrong size and you bring that shirt home, your wife is going to be very upset, because it's not going to fit, and the kid's not going to like it if it's not the right style. And so you have to be very sure that you're buying the exact size that fits your child. He says, my family is very different. He says that I have 5 kids at home. I have an older son, I have a younger daughter, I have so many kids, and so I can just pull things off the rack, and even if it doesn't fit this child and it's too big for this one, well, he has an older brother, and maybe it'll fit him. And even if it's too small for this child, well, he has a younger daughter, and maybe it'll fit that child. And I can just pull things off the rack. I don't have to check the sizes, because I know that it'll fit someone. And also, I happen to be a very young guy, and my wife and I plan on having even more kids. And so if it doesn't even fit any of these kids, if it's too small for all these kids, well, maybe I'll have another kid, and it'll fit that child. Or maybe these kids will have more kids, I'll have grandkids, and it'll eventually fit them. And so I can just take things off the rack, because I know confidently it'll fit someone. The Dudah Magid explains that when we dive into HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Hashem says no, those tefillos are not just tossed into the garbage. Those tefillos are saved, and they're stored for us. As the pasuk in Tehillim says in verse number 10, in the middle of that pasuk, Sima dimasi binodecha. Hashem, place our tears in your flask. Hashem keeps track of all the tefillos and all the tears that we have, and he stores them, and he puts them in inventory, and he waits that for the time that we're really going to need those tefillos. And when we really need them, Hashem's going to pull them out, and Hashem's going to say, this is a tefillah that's going to help the current situation that you find yourself in. He explains beautifully, that's what Hashem was saying to Avraham. Hashem was saying to Avraham, I know 100%, Hashem says, that I'm going to destroy Sodom, and there's no way that Avraham's going to change my mind. But still, how could I hide this opportunity from Avraham? What an opportunity. Avram's going to daven and daven over and over again an unanswered tefillah, because he's not going to change my mind. So I'm going to destroy Sodom anyway. And Avram's going to daven so many tefillos. And why is that important? Because hayo yiyeh legoy gadol. There's going to be all of us in here who can really use Avram's tefillos. And so Avram davened so many tefillos for Sodom, and none of them were answered at that time. But they're going to be answered for us when we really need them. We start a Vishmona Esrei with Zechus Avos, that Hashem should answer our tefillos, and He should sometimes tap into that tefillah of the Avos, or tap into some of our tefillos, that Hashem stores away, and He stores away our tears. And hopefully when we really need them, Hashem will pull them out, and we'll always have them ready. Rav Pinkus, in verse number 11, gives a practical example of when that can be helpful. And he says, imagine you have family in Israel, and there's someone who can really use your help, and they can really use your tefillos. But you're in America, and it's still Shabbos for you, and they're trying to WhatsApp you, and they can't reach you. And if only you knew, you would be davening your heart out. But you have no idea. And you're sitting comfortably at your Shabbos table. You don't know if there are things to daven for. And so what's going to happen? Hashem's just not going to have any tefillos from you because you don't know to daven? You're unaware of the circumstances that require your tefillos? So Rav Pinkus says, based on this idea of the Dibna Magid, even when you don't know what to daven for, Hashem always has that flask. Hashem always has that inventory of tefillos that He can pull one out even if we don't know to daven. Hashem can always pull one out for us, and we can always have that tefillah ready to go for us at some point in the future, or for some point for our children, or for our children's children. So when Hashem says no, those tefillos are being stored for us and not just thrown into the garbage, a waste of time. The next idea from Rav Asher Weiss, I will say very quickly, it has math involved, and I was told if you say math in his ear, people stop listening. I happen to be an actuary, and so I would peek up. I would start listening when you start talking about math. But he goes through the 515 tefillos of Moshe that were not answered. What happened to those 515 tefillos? And so he goes through the math, and he says the number of years from when Moshe made those tefillos until the end of time, when the Chazal said that the world is going to end, is 515 cycles of Shemitah. Each one is 7 years. 515 of those cycles is how much time was left from when Moshe made those tefillos until the end of the world. Because those tefillos of Moshe Rabbeinu that Hashem did not answer, He is answering every single day for the rest of Klal Yisrael. Since Moshe made those tefillos until the end of the world, Hashem is tapping into those tefillos. Hashem is pulling out those tefillos from the inventory and using them for when we really need them. And we'll close with a quote from the father of Nachshon Laxman. For many of us know, Nachshon Laxman was an Israeli soldier who was a young man and was kidnapped on a Motzei Shabbos, and the terrorists threatened to end his life if Israel wasn't going to release hundreds of Hamas prisoners. And ultimately, in the end of the day, what happened was all of Klal Yisrael were davening together for this Nachshon Laxman. No matter what kind of Jew you were, it didn't matter what your hashkafa was, everyone was together at the Kotel. Everyone was davening for Nachshon Laxman just to come home free, just to come home safe. And unfortunately, in the end of the day, after a week, he did not have the opportunity to come home safe, and his life was taken by these terrorists. And so Nachshon Laxman's father approached the Rosh Yeshiva. Nachshon's Rosh Yeshiva was set to speak at the Hesped, to give the Hesped at the Levaya for Nachshon Laxman, and Nachshon's father said to the Rosh Yeshiva, I want you to say the following at the Hesped. Nachshon's father said, people have been approaching me, and they've been saying, how could it be? How could it be that all of Klal Yisrael are davening for the same exact thing? So many tefillos, people who haven't lit Shabbos candles in their entire lives were lighting them that night. They're lighting an extra candle for Nachshon. People who hadn't uttered a tefillah out of their lips in their entire lives were davening and taking on mitzvos and zechuyos for Nachshon. How could it be that Hashem did not answer any of those tefillos? And so Nachshon said, to say at the eulogy, Nachshon's father said that you should tell everyone at the eulogy that they should realize Hashem answered all of those tefillos. Hashem answered every single tefillah that was uttered by the words of people who are davening for Nachshon Laxman. It just happens to be that sometimes the answer is no. And hopefully tonight we were able to discuss what it means and what we can walk away with when the answer is no. We discussed some ideas about the real goal of tefillah is not necessarily what the answer to our request is, as much as the fact that we're making such a request, that we have become friends with the doctor. We have the opportunity to inculcate within ourselves a heightened level of emunah that Hashem is the one who can answer our tefillos. And we also discussed the chizuk that one can have, the glimmer of hope, that 516th tefillah may be the one that Hashem answers. And that sometimes the answer is no, because Hashem is saying, Ma ketzake lai, what are you davening for? Hashem says no because He loves us. And He realizes we're just davening for the wrong thing. And most importantly, to realize that even when the answer is no, that Hashem stores all of those tefillos. All of those tefillos are being saved for a future time when we need them the most. And Amir Tzah Hashem, with all these different ideas, we should walk away with a better understanding of how tefillah works. We shouldn't be discouraged from davening when Hashem says no, but we should persevere and daven more, like Yitzchak was here by the Hetzir. And Amir Tzah Hashem, with all of our tefillos, Hashem should not answer all of our tefillos, but Hashem should be Mali Mishalos Libenu Latova.